Malloy here on the Nova M Radio Network. Thank you very much for tuning in. How's everybody doing tonight, huh? Floods where you live? Heat wave? Thermal inversions? Ozone? Tornadoes? Dust storms? Dust bowl? Last night was a very rough night. If you were listening to the program last night and you've decided that's it, I've had enough of Malloy, I don't blame you. I don't blame you. Last night was just horrifying. We had some major technical difficulties, and I think I finally got all the prednisone out of my system. I think I was having roid rage. God, I hate drugs. Those kind. If you get this bronchitis thing, I talked to some friends across the country over the past 4 or 5 days, and it seems like this is going around. Somebody sent me an email, said it's the chemtrails, Mike. I don't know. That's a topic I haven't really looked at that much. Don't send me anything! Because I know where to go to get all the information on atmospheric chemtrails. Anyway, let us gather for a moment of silent prayer here. Well, this is Thursday night. We used to do prayer meeting on Wednesday night. Silent prayer and hope that the program goes smoothly this evening. No technical screw-ups and no Malloy popping so far out of his crawl space. The spring break, which is apparently what happened last night. I got a series of emails today from people that said, have you thought about a different line of work? And the answer to that is, oh, hell yeah, many times. So anyway, here we are. The madness continues. The Vietnam thing that has somehow morphed from the Iraq thing is astonishing. I'm really going out of my mind with this Vietnam-Iraq. Remember what Andy Card said also back before Bush launched his filthy, murderous war. You don't introduce new product in August. Remember that? You don't introduce. That's why they waited for 4 or 5 months after that before they launched the invasion. But all the talk about invading Iraq, you don't introduce a new product in August. Well, somehow they've screwed up because it is still August. And they've already introduced new product, the new product being how Bush is going to resell the war. They are using a series of television commercials that are just obscene. I've never seen anything as obscene as these commercials. And by the way, John Warner, is it John? The senator from Virginia? Who looks older than dirt. Why is this? I've got nothing against old people. Hell, I hope to be one someday. Shut up, Kathy. But John Warner, what the hell is John Warner? And all these old farts in the Senate, what are they doing? Get rid of these people. Give me some Jim Webbs. Give me some Paul Rykoffs. Give me some, give me some people that are at least under the age of 90. Can you do that? Dear God, we need some leadership. You know, these old Senate, what do they want to be called? War horses or, I don't know what the hell they are. Warner's so old, he used to be married to Elizabeth Taylor. Oh my God. Warner is playing the most base form of political game with the lives of American soldiers. This statement he came out with today that mainstream media is just gasping over, as if this old freak said something substantive. He did not. This is part of the game. That's all.
Well, I think we ought to have a president seriously concerned. Bringing home, 15 or 20 of these troops by Christmas.
You know, what is this? Republicans, including Republicans like John Warner, are just so vile. It's incredible. It's incredible. Let the Democrats in Congress, in the Senate, decide to pass a resolution condemning the war or saying, look, we support the troops, we ought to end this. And all these twits like Mitch McConnell and the rest of these people just stand up and start frothing at the mouth about the Democrats are playing politics with the soldiers' lives. And then you have somebody like John Warner, who,
when he walks into a room, you know, the cameras all turn over on him, because, you know, he's a Navy veteran, World War something, speaks with moral authority.
John Warner walks into a room and starts talking about, well, maybe, you know, maybe we ought to send a message to everybody concerned. He wants to use the lives of American soldiers to send a message to who, John? Maliki, whatever the hell his name is. Is Bush? Who? Who are you sending the message to? And how are you going to choose which 15 or 20 or 1,000 soldiers and Marines to be home for Christmas? What are you going to do, John? Have a lottery? That would be fun. Let's have a lottery. Let's do that. Let's have the 160,000 combat soldiers and Marines in Iraq and the support people with them all be assigned a number. Right, John? Toss them into a big drum, and then on, oh, I don't know, a week before Christmas, you can go over there and pull out 1,000 names and say,
I mean, we're sending a message here. You know, we're sending a message to, what's the guy's name?
Where do these people come from? So all this talk, and I've been fascinated, just fascinated, watching the media coverage of Warner's statements today. Completely blown away. As though he's A, saying something coherent, B, saying something new, C, saying something to challenge Bush, D, not playing politics with the lives of soldiers and Marines. Now, all of the above, A, B, C, and D, is just all bat squeeze. It's more of the game plan. I wonder who went to Warner and said, all right, you've got our permission. Go ahead. Here's your statement. Now, John, wait till about 3:30 when the assignment editors for all the networks are scrambling for that lead story. You know, they got the floods in Findlay, and you know, what else they got? Any choppers go down Iraq today? No choppers down today? Okay, all right, John, wait till about 3. All right, wait till 4 o'clock. And then we want you to come out, have a live press conference, and we want you to say that you're telling the president it's time for him to order some troops home by Christmas. By God. All right, John?
Okay.
This is so disgusting. It is so incredibly vile. So there's John Warner. Moral authority? Warner? Moral authority? This guy? This thug? This Virginia Klan-loving a nutball who thinks he's a gentleman farmer? I don't know what the hell he thinks he is. What does John Warner think? Does he think he's somehow related to Jefferson? This right-wing piglet who now plays politics with the lives, really plays politics, not sponsoring a resolution in the Senate. Oh, no, 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 no. Suggesting somehow, some way, that this twit murderous freak in the White House select some good little soldiers to come home by Christmas in order to send a message. John, I'm still not clear. To whom are you sending the message? To whom? To whom, John? The American people? Is this where we're supposed to go,
oh, look, the president is bringing home the troops. Oh, good. We love him now. Let us put his popularity rating back up to 39. We really do love him. He is a good Christian man.
Is that who your message is for, John? Or is it for Maliki? Is it to warn him, snap his head back? Huh?
Go with the program, Maliki, or, well, we're pulling out. That's what we're doing. We're pulling out.
So how do you feel now if you're a soldier or a Marine and you're paying attention to this garbage and not trying to defend your own life in Iraq? How do you respond to this? You say, oh, I wonder if I'll be in among the lucky 1,000, or is it going to be 1,500? Well, it looks like, John Warner is saying to the president, it's time to pull out. What the hell am I doing standing out here taking a chance on getting murdered? Oh, damn. This is so confusing. I just wish I had my job back. I never should have joined that reserve unit back in Bowling Green. I just shouldn't have done it. Well, here I am. What do I do now? Stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-one past the hour. Well, I've got the monitor on here in the broadcast booth, and I've got it tuned to MSNBC, and dear God, there's a bulletin here. I don't know if you can handle this. Sit down, please, please, please. Lindsay Lohan has been sentenced to one day in jail and 10 days of community service. MS, which stands for Microsoft, NBC, which stands for National Broadcasting Corporation, MSNBC. There's your latest bulletin from... this is from Jack. I got a couple of emails here, and I want to share them with you before we get into the meat of the program tonight. I also have something that Shelley Drobny wrote that I'm going to share with you about AIPAC, the American-Israel Political Action Committee, being a force for... ungood, double ungood in U.S. politics. We'll get to that in a second. Good evening, Mike. I don't know if you've seen this new commercial being aired. Yeah, I've seen it. A young Iraq war veteran begins talking about how everything we've done thus far in Iraq has been for the good and how, quote, we cannot quit now, end quote. They then show this young man as he proceeds to hobble down the front steps of his house, at which point it is clearly visible this young man is a double amputee who's lost legs probably in Iraq. The young man continues about how we must not quit in Iraq. And with that, they put a photograph up of the second jet hitting the World Trade Tower. As this young man goes on to say that if we leave Iraq, the people that attacked us on 9/11 will come over here and attempt to attack us again. Do you freaking believe this garbage? Do you honestly believe that someone would have the blanks to air such utter propaganda? I felt like throwing my television out the window. Is this how the Germans felt? What blanks? What blanks? You know these evil sons of bitches, Bush and Cheney, had something to do with this. Well, it's Ari Fleischer. Ari Fleischer is head of the PR firm now that is going to use death and destruction and amputees and... PTSD'd soldiers in order to continue to sell Bush's war. This is astonishing. John Warner's statement today is merely, this is the good cop, bad cop thing. People see that commercial and they blanch. They just go, oh my Christ, you can't be serious. They're not doing this. And then you have Warner come out at 4 o'clock this afternoon and say, well, I think we ought to, the president ought to bring some of these boys home by Christmas. This is the oldest trick in the Republican playbook. It's horrifying. All of it's horrifying. But let the Democrats in the Senate decide to pass a resolution condemning the war, and they will be immediately accused of playing politics with our soldiers' lives. Yeah. Mike in St. Paul wrote in, we were talking last night, the big story yesterday was Bush's reference to Vietnam/Iraq. What a pig. What a horrifying example of just smashing his idiot skull into the face of every single American who had to deal with that war in Vietnam, whether they were in combat or not in combat, civilians, parents, kids, whether they were Vietnamese, it doesn't make any difference. Bush walked up yesterday and just smashed it all into a million pieces. He doesn't care. This is what happens when you have someone who is an amoral psychopath, excuse me, I repeat myself, like Bush in office. Mike in St. Paul writes, Mike, what infuriates me about Bush's evocation of Vietnam to Iraq, question mark, one, by attempting to use the tragedy of Vietnam to his political advantage. Bush spits in the face of those who, because of economic disadvantage, were forced to fight and die in Vietnam while he enjoyed his hookers and his cocaine-laden summers back in the States. Two, by evoking terms like boat people, Bush preys on the ignorant fears of the redneck types who fear an influx of Mexican people, let alone the influx of Hmong and now Iraqis. Oh, God, watch out, conservatives. Here come more dark-skinned people. Of course, Bush will still try to play to Hispanics by pretending to be their friend, which they are all onto at this point. And three, finally, Bush displays his ignorance and worse, indifference of the loss of millions of lives for an unnecessary conflict then and now. Yeah. And then this from Jack. The September 11th, Mike, will be the sixth anniversary since that tragic day, and so all of these corporate media whores will probably put up a split screen on your television. On one side, you'll have David Petraeus at the Senate Armed Service Committee giving his pre-written testimony about the progress we're making in Iraq. And on the other side of the screen, you'll see Bush laying a wreath at Ground Zero and then giving another one of his redundant propaganda speeches, like an old 33 RPM record that just keeps skipping. Bush will explain to the American people about how we must never forget that terrible day. We must fight the terrorists over there so we don't have to fight them over here. Yeah, you know that's going to happen. You know it's going to happen. Let's take a break here. We'll be back. You're listening to the Nova M Radio Network. My name is Mike Malloy.
Soothing bedtime lullaby. It's Mike Malloy.
Look at the state of the world that we live in, where no one gives a damn about the future of children. Just building a cash flow, making a bank account.
It's about 25 before the hour. Let's get this call from Chris, who's listening in Oakland, California, on the Quake. Chris, welcome to the program.
Hi, Mike.
Hey. Yeah, go ahead. You're on the air.
Hi, I called in. I was listening to you earlier commenting on what's going on in Washington, the latest, especially with that commercial that
right.
is being aired to support Bush and his ridiculous war.
Uh-huh.
And I happen to work with individuals like that who they're mindless primitives who believe in anything and everything that Bush has said.
Mm-hmm.
They've never questioned. And I live in the San Francisco Bay Area, which is supposed to be that bastion of civility of very few spots in the country like that. But we do have those people here, too, who no matter what happens,
mm-hmm.
they are still behind that man 100% and don't like it when you question what he says.
Right.
It's amazing that when I talk with these people how...
Well, what's horrifying to me is the use of amputees to... to produce more amputees. I mean, this is what it's getting down to. Somebody who was lied into a war, this soldier who appears in that ad, I don't care what his dedication was or his level of patriotism, and whatever it was, I certainly respect it. But here's the bottom line. He was lied into a combat situation that cost him part of his body. And now he is willing to stand there. I'm not saying he's willing to do it, but somehow through his pain and trauma and the fog of these lies dumped on him, he is using his personal image to produce more amputees based on a lie. This is the part to me that is monstrous.
What I can say about that, I'm 55 years old now. However, when I went into the service, I was in the Navy, 1969, right out of high school. I was a teenager. And I did it for two reasons. One, I had to find a way to get out of Florida.
Right.
Because I just couldn't handle it anymore. I knew I never belonged there. Two, that was the quickest way for me to get out of there and never return to live, that is. And my idea was to go to college later. Well, at 18 years old, like so many of these young men, they aren't thinking about things like that because they're so young and there's so much that they don't know.
Sure.
They're very impressionable. And they do believe to some extent. Now, I knew all along that the war was wrong. However, I was placing priorities, and that is what I did.
Mm-hmm.
The experience of Vietnam taught me one very, very important lesson, is that I should never, ever trust this government again as long as I live. And Bush has simply provided me with the impetus to continue that conviction, and I would never abandon it. I listen, and I listen carefully. I know what to listen to, such as your radio program, for example. I do not listen to television news, and I've not for a very long time.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you really have to consider that these are very young people coming from all walks of life. Who knows what it is? And they're very impressionable.
Right, and I understand, Chris, and that is that's what happens. You have pathological middle-aged or old men who send impressionable, immortal, in their minds, young men off to have limbs blown off and families destroyed and their lives lost. I hear you, Chris. Thanks. I appreciate you checking in. This is from Cindy, who wrote in about the Vietnam thing. Mike, my husband served in Vietnam in 67. He stepped on a mine and luckily, did not lose his foot, but has suffered physically and mentally for the past 40 years. We are sickened, disheartened, and outraged by Bush's war in Iraq. There are no words to describe our anguish and disgust. The son of one of our friends, 25 years old, came home from Iraq and could not reconcile life after Iraq, so he took his own life with pills he received from the Veterans Hospital. I spoke at my class reunion this August. The summer of 67 was ironically called the Summer of Love, even though there was not one major U.S. city that was not riddled with Vietnam War protests and civil rights riots. The Middle East, too, was deep in unrest. The Six-Day War, Syria, Jordan, and Iraq entered the conflict. In the fall of 67, some of us danced to All You Need Is Love by the Beatles while our friends, classmates, and relatives fought and died. I asked the question to my classmates, does history repeat itself? Yeah, first is farce, then is tragedy, huh? This is from James in Seattle. Mike, it may be fitting to remind people of George Bush's extremely far-fetched military record during Vietnam, as he likes talking about that subject so much lately. To anyone who ever served in the military, especially around that time, he was supposed to have been serving in the Air National Guard. His publicly released record makes no sense whatsoever. First, he was supposed to have gone through enlisted basic training at Lackland Air Force Base in Texas, and then after finishing with that, he was given a direct commission as an officer without going through any officer's training, a real first in the history of the United States Air Force. Next, he was supposed to have gone through USAF flight school, again without having first gone through officer's training, something which would not have been allowed, at least not at that time, to former pilots from other branches of the military, who would have been required to have gone through the United States Air Force officer training first, and the same protocols applied to the other military branches as well. Somehow Bush managed to have gone through his very limited Air National Guard service without ever being drug tested. I'm sure many other veterans will relate to you the same experience which I had, being tested an incredible number of times, which for someone like myself who has never smoked, drank, or even taken drugs, nor voted Republican, was a monumental bother. As certain military specialties, especially those in the area of aviation, is considered mandatory, the drug testing. Although people reported seeing him at his Air National Guard duty station in Texas, where he was described as both a coward and a goof-off, no one has ever recalled seeing him at any other Air National Guard duty station in Alabama, where he was supposed to be attached to. This, then, is the imbecile who dares hold forth on revisionistic Vietnam history. Yeah, it's horrifying. It just gets worse every day, doesn't it? Huh? And then this, I think this is, yeah, this is the last one on the Vietnam comments. This is from Lauren in Edmonton, Alberta, Canada. Lauren writes, Mike, I listened to your show through the AM bounce up here in Edmonton. I was listening tonight, that's last night, when you discussed Bush's Vietnam comparison. You called Bush anti-military. I, as a non-American, am puzzled as to why being anti-military is a bad thing. Well, I'll comment as I go along. I didn't mean it as a bad thing. I meant that he is anti-military, but he presents himself as pro-military. Lauren goes on. I know you've noticed the omnipresent militarism soaked in, along with the hyper-patriotism, jingoism, and other disturbing displays of American insecurities and pathologies, but still you seem to grant it a pass that it doesn't deserve. What are you talking about, Lauren? When it comes to the U.S. military, ask yourself, when was the last time, or at any time, has the institution calling itself National Defense actually defended America? Most of us are who think clearly, Lauren, are aware of that. I understand the attitude that most Americans are dumbasses, but you may be pushing the envelope a little bit here, my friend. Then Lauren writes, you'll be hard-pressed to think of an example where the military was used for its mythic purpose, and the one time it was actually needed on September 11th was nowhere to be found. But that's not my main concern, Lauren writes. Something you mentioned rankled me when you spoke of casualties of America's serial wars, specifically Vietnam. You mentioned the 58,000 dead Americans as if they were the victims instead of the perpetrators of that monstrous crime. Lauren, you really do need to, you're presenting yourself as someone who's an authority on American military history, and I think you need to go back to square one and first of all understand that Vietnam was a conscripted war, that of the 58,000 Americans who died there, a lot of them were victims. They were victims in the sense that they were put into a situation based on lies in the Cold War. There were also 3 million Indochinese who were victims. But anyway, Lauren goes on. Food for thought, the Vietnam Memorial in Washington is 150 meters long. If it contained the names of the estimated number of killed Vietnamese, Cambodians, Laotians, and whomever else got in Kissinger's way, that black gash would stretch for almost 5 miles. Well, yeah, but that's the point of every program I have ever done. I'm not sure what Lauren is trying to say here, but I'm sure his heart's in the right place. He closes with, you are to be commended as one of the few public voices who dare mention that Iraqis are dying, especially mentioning the million part. It's really frustrating to listen to alleged liberals or progressives who have such sympathy for American soldiers that refuse to acknowledge the hard truth that those troops are the ones pulling the trigger that's cost over a million Iraqis their lives. Etc., etc. Signed, cheers, Lauren, Edmonton, Alberta. You miss hearing me, my friend. You really do. As far as I'm concerned, anyone who dies in a war, especially like Vietnam or the Iraq War, is a victim.
And I think I deserve what I'm seeking. Am I just a photo op to you? Powerful resource to spend. A Thanksgiving stunt for the papers. A means to a personal end. Oh, let this end. and I don't think it's true.
Doing talk radio right. From the left, it's more of Mike Malloy.
Riders on the storm. Riders on the storm. Into this house we're born. Into this world we're thrown.
It's about 10 before the hour. Coming up next hour, we have Uncle Mike's Story Corner. That you may find a little bit intense, but it is appropriate. This is from Charlie again. Charlie had written the other night about asking people to go to impeachbush.org about the demonstration coming up September 15th to remove this thug from office. A demonstration in D.C., and I've mentioned it a couple of times, but got another email from her today. Mike, see, your show tonight on Bush's goons keeping all protests out of his sight and off camera, I really think you should, or Kathy should, look into the problems ImpeachBush.org is getting from this administration as to their September 15th march on the Capitol. This dictatorship will hate it if this march is aired to the American people. I don't hear about this planned demonstration anywhere except on the email from them. Thanks, Charlie. I will keep mentioning it, September 15th. I will. I went to impeach Nixon, demonstrations way back in 72 or 73. And they, to the extent that they were effective or not effective, you know, Bush finally was approached by people who said, get out of town, you thug. My point again about demonstrations is, I guess, you know, I'm just out of energy, or I don't believe they work because they don't have the broad-based support that demonstrations used to have. Unless I'm remembering things that didn't happen, I realize that time can distort memory for sure. Either there is not the broad-based support the demonstrations used to have, or, and that may be a trick of memory, but this is the truth. This is indisputable. Media do not cover these events any longer. Media are part of the problem, especially television. Television is a nest of whores and bastards, no offense to sex workers, whores and bastards and thugs, and people who work for the imposition of corporatism or fascism in this country, not against it. So, you know, I don't know. I'll keep talking about it. I will. Julie wrote in, the other night I had mentioned something about, you know, the reason that Petraeus is going to make his announcement on the 11th is because on the 12th and 13th, Congress is adjourned for Rosh Hashanah, and I made some remark about Rosh Hashanah. They adjourned for that now? Julie writes in, Mike, just wanted to let you know that in the Jewish faith, Rosh Hashanah and Yom Kippur are the holiest days of the year, which are akin to Christmas and Easter. We have, as a minority, referring to the Jews, we have been having to miss work or school on these days for many years. As a child, I hated the fact that not only did I have to go to temple all day, but then I would have to, that I would have double the homework to do the next day because as a second-class citizen, being a non-Christian, we weren't given our holiday off. I wouldn't knock the fact that something other than a Christian holiday is being acknowledged, but rather celebrate the fact that the Jesus freaks are giving us a break. As far as other faiths, we should look into other major religions' holidays as well, being that this is not a Christian nation. By the way, although I was raised Jewish, I am in a confused state now and consider myself one-quarter Jew and three-quarters atheist and currently studying Buddhism. The Buddhism is for mental health reasons, as it is supposed to help with that. It is also a non-theistic religion. Duh, you know this. Anyway, I know you were in a pissy mood last night, and totally get that, living in Arizona, where I've been trapped indoors for several months with no end in sight. However, just wanted to pass along these thoughts, since although we know you hate religion, and believe me, I'm in your corner, There should be accommodations for those who aren't following the Christian Catholic faiths. I understand, Julie. My point, though, is what is any religion doing captivating days in the calendar that are officially recognized by any branch of government? I don't care if it's Hinduism, Judaism, Christianity, in all its many and various forms. It doesn't make any difference what their faith is. Having priests and chanters and holy men come into a government house and open the session of government every day with a prayer to some mythical cloud being, to me, is insanity. It's just total insanity, especially since most of the time those people opening the sessions of Congress are either Jewish, Christian, or Muslim, all of whom believe that some talking snake had something to do with the theory of creation. This is nonsense. It's bat squeeze. That's my objection, Julie. It's not Rosh Hashanah or Christmas or Ramadan. It's all of it. What the hell is it doing in the way people govern themselves? And I understand, there is a resurgence. Oh, isn't there? If you've been watching any of Christiane Amanpour's The Warriors of God, her series on the hate-filled religions that are bouncing around this planet right now, devouring people, devouring science, devouring decency, devouring honesty, devouring morality and nobility, all these hate-filled, twisted, perverted, murderous religions that are just flopping around like monstrous beasts with fangs and tentacles, just slopping people to their graves. If you've been watching this, you can't come away from it not understanding that there is a deep, profound, murderous resurgence of sick, perverted religion that is occurring now, thanks to people like Bush, thanks to people like Bin Laden, thanks to people like the Saudis, thanks to any religious nutcase who stands there and constantly screams at everybody else, "My God can beat your God's ass," and not only can, but will, starting now. No, it has nothing to do with Rosh Hashanah, Julie. Welcome back. About 7 past the hour. The report is out. This is a report that was put together several months ago, but it's finally been released regarding our involvement in Iraq and the response of the fake government that we have put in place there. Keep in mind that the war in Iraq now is... our occupation, invasion and occupation of Iraq, two components to make up the so-called war in Iraq, has now gone on longer than our own civil war. It's just unbelievable. But according to this report, the government of Prime Minister Nouri al-Maliki will become, report's words, more precarious over the next couple of months. And the report also says that Iraq's security forces are not strong enough to operate without outside help. Who do you think that would be, huh? The report concluded that, quote, "Iraqi political leaders remain unable to govern effectively," end quote. Not only is that an extremely patronizing and condescending statement, I mean, what happened? The Iraq Provisional Authority, or whatever it was called, our forcing of a form of government on the Iraqis after we invaded, that they simply are not conditioned to understand or accept. They didn't have the infrastructure. They didn't have independent courts. They didn't have legislative branch. Not in the sense that is necessary to impose Western style so-called democracy. It's incredible. So, you know, we storm in there, beat the hell out of everybody, smash things beyond belief, execute their leader, give them all ink stains on their fingers and tell them to vote for one of, 600 political parties. This is insanity to try to impose on an essentially tribal society such as Iraq, and religious / tribal society such as Iraq, the kind of Western style government that took 5,000-6,000 years to evolve in Greece, Native American cultures, and through the European Enlightenment. And all of a sudden, what we're going to do is ram this down the throats of Iraqis. And then when it will not work, stand back and warn them that if they don't do it, we're going to what? Spank them, kill more of them, pull out, let the bloodbath begin. How did we get to this? What kind of leadership in this country allowed this to happen? Well, it had nothing to do with imposing democracy. You and I know it as well as we know that compass needle always points north, right? We know that. We understand that. This was about imperialism, aggression, greed, lust, stupidity, and the sick, twisted mind of a cyborg like Dick Cheney and this peanut crowd. This had about as much to do with democracy as I have to do with the Pope. In other words, nothing. Moreover, this report says that changing the mission of American troops, which right now, I guess, is going after insurgents, if we change that to providing combat support for these invisible Iraqi forces, then the report says that would, quote, erode security gains achieved thus far, end quote. Security gains. Those are the gains that we witness every day when another car bomb goes off and 500 people are blown into red mist, I would imagine. So in other words, what this report is laying out for the American public to chew on is a lose-lose situation. If we stay, we're doomed. If we leave, we're doomed. If we stay partly, we're doomed. If we leave partly, we're doomed. Everything. Do you see what Bush and Cheney have done? And I don't care how many of these right-wing twits on radio and television or in the military talk about, well, you know, we got to stay the course. Well, you know, things are being done. Some freaked-out PTSD monster like John McCain, who walks around covered in armor with air support and then comes home and says, yeah, well, I had a nice stroll through the marketplace. It's really wonderful. So the report is out. You got to wonder, with this latest national intelligence estimate, Jesus, since it indicates there is no end in sight, there is no way to win this, and everything is a lose situation. Of course, there were millions of us around the globe who explained that as patiently as we could through bullhorns and signs and marches and demonstrations 5 years ago, almost. Trying to tell these murderous rat bastards in the Bush administration, look, this is not going to work. You don't understand. People like me and you, we don't have degrees in political science. We don't understand international relations. We really don't. What you and I have is the common sense to look at a situation in one of the most volatile areas of the globe and say, bad idea to send in a Western military invasion, dumbass. But they did it anyway. So here we are. And now this filthy pig, George Bush, stands up in front of people, once again using military, this time veterans, to hide behind this cowardly twit, talking about the comparison between Iraq and Vietnam. Oh, we don't want another Vietnam, he says. What does Bush know about Vietnam except it was something to hide from and stay coked out of his mind about and drunk on his ass and unable to complete a United States Air Force physical? What does George Bush know about Vietnam? What does George Bush know about anything? So here we are. And now these pigs are enlisting veterans who've had their limbs blown off to try to convince other veterans, to other soldiers to stick around until their limbs are blown off. Soldiers who were lied into a war. Soldiers who have given their body parts to a cowardly man who said nothing but lies to get this war going. My God, if that does not define, on some level, evil, then you tell me, Truth Seeker, what does. This Bush regime is not only incompetent and politically inept and sick and greedy and destructive, it is also evil, purely evil. This is the kind of evil all these Christian fundamentalist preachers around this country ought to be pointing their fingers at and saying, I accuse, I accuse, I accuse. You dominionists and Christian nutballs, if you want something to see that is truly evil, get your damn hands off the privacy of some woman who might need an abortion and take a look at what this monster is doing from the Oval Office. Ah, but you'd never do that, would you? Because you people, you fake Christian Armageddonists, you love this. This is milk and honey to you. More death, more destruction. Kill them all. No, I understand. All right, when we come back, there's something I want to share with you. An op-ed piece written by Shelley that says, AIPAC is hurting Israel, Jews, and Middle East peace. And this is important because it is a very interesting piece written by a man who happens to be Jewish, who is very involved in spiritually and to the extent that he still practices in the existence of the State of Israel, but from an entirely different perspective than what so many of these neocon Zionist thugs do. So I want you to hear what Shelley wrote. It's at opednews.com. We'll share it with you when we come back. And then we're going to have Uncle Mike's Story Corner and some phone calls later on. So stick around. I'm Mike Malloy. This is the Nova M Radio Network.
There's blood on your hands, mister. You'll answer for one day. And the tears you shed on that day won't wash your sins away. Will Jesus wash the blood stains from your hands? Will he welcome you into that peaceful land? Will he forgive the killing, the war you have planned? Will Jesus wash the blood stains from your
And now, the man conservatives love to hate, it's Mike Malloy.
21 past the hour. The title of this, and it's at opednews.com, written by Shelley Drobny, AIPAC, as most of you know what that is, American Israel Public Affairs Committee. AIPAC is hurting Israel, Jews, and Middle East peace. Here's what it says. At the risk of being called a self-hating Jew, I have come to the conclusion that AIPAC is hurting the cause that it was supposed to advance when it was formed in 1953. The American Israel Public Affairs Committee is an American special interest group that lobbies the United States Congress and White House in favor of maintaining a close U.S.-Israel relationship. Describing itself as, quote, America's pro-Israel lobby, end quote, it is a mass membership organization including primarily Jews, but also non-Jews, Democrats, Republicans, and Independents. AIPAC was formed during the Eisenhower administration and since then has helped secure American aid and support to Israel. In 1997, Fortune magazine asked congressmen to rank the 25 most powerful lobbying organizations in D.C. In 2005, the National Journal did the same. Both times, AIPAC came in second, ahead of, for instance, the AFL-CIO and the NRA, but behind the AARP. In 2001, it came in fourth on the Fortune list. All the good that they had done for Israel in their early days has now been offset by the power they have established in the D.C. community. As with any powerful lobby, there is a tendency for such groups to bully their way through the Congress to achieve its goal, and AIPAC is no worse or better than the NRA and other such self-interest groups. While AIPAC is primarily a Jewish organization, I am aware that most liberal Jews hate what they are doing and the tactics that they are using. Since over 70% of American Jews are liberal, I believe that AIPAC is not representing the views of most of the Jewish community. I've talked to many in Congress who are both Jews and non-Jews, and they have all told me how difficult it is to deal with AIPAC. Most would vote for aid to Israel without AIPAC. The fact is that the foreign aid that goes primarily to Israel and Egypt has almost unanimous support in Congress. Most of that is military. Unfortunately, AIPAC has blinders as to what constitutes real aid to Israel. And military aid is not the only answer either to Israel or Egypt. The money would be better spent on a more balanced allocation between military and economic development. Unfortunately, AIPAC has completely lost its objectivity about what is good for Israel. My parents were immigrants from Poland, where they suffered greatly due to anti-Semitism. Most of that anti-Semitism was caused by the anti-Jewish preachings of Christianity for nearly 2,000 years. It is only in the last 100 years that Islam has adopted the anti-Jewish position held by Europe as a result of the Zionist movement. And that movement was adopted because of the European oppression of the Jews, which caused Theodore Herzl to come to the conclusion that Jews would never be free in a Christian society. It is widely believed that Herzl was motivated by the Dreyfus Affair, a notorious anti-Semitic incident in France in which a French Jewish army captain was falsely convicted of spying for Germany. Herzl had been covering the trial of Dreyfus for an Austro-Hungarian newspaper. He also witnessed mass rallies in Paris following the Dreyfus trial, where many chanted, "Death to the Jews." And in June 1895, he wrote in his diary, quote, "In Paris, as I have said, I achieved a freer attitude toward anti-Semitism. Above all, I recognize the emptiness and futility of trying to combat anti-Semitism," end quote. Unfortunately, the movement to migrate Jews to Palestine created a geopolitical adversary in the Muslim-dominated Middle East, which had also been oppressed by European colonialism. Unfortunately, the Allies, after World War II, refused to allow free immigration for over 500,000 Jewish survivors of the Holocaust, and accordingly, these displaced persons had no choice but to immigrate to Palestine. These so-called DP, or displaced persons camps, were almost as bad as any of the concentration camps that they survived. The Jewish communities around the world have made wonderful contributions to civil and human rights. In addition, no community has a better record of standing up for and actively being involved in humane causes and opposing racism and intolerance throughout the world. That is why I believe that AIPAC is now advocating the very intolerance and violence that the Jewish communities have fought against for centuries. They, AIPAC, have now become what most thoughtful Jews would describe as anti-Jewish bullies who even attack other Jews for having differences with them. It is time for AIPAC to understand that the only real help for Israel comes from the peace process and not fascist-type tactics. AIPAC does not represent me or most of the views of the Jewish community. And as most of you know, Shaoli Drobny was one of the co-founders of Nova M Radio and Air America. So I wanted to share that with you because I know a lot of folks are aware of the extraordinary power that AIPAC has over just about every political candidate, Democrat and Republican, in the United States. And I agree with Shelley, it is time for that power to end. It is time for this particular lobby to go away. It is not doing anything good for, certainly not for Israel, and it certainly is not doing anything good for the American political system. So I humbly concur with Shelley Drobny's conclusions. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, Uncle Mike's Story Corner, and then what else do we have here? your phone calls. Oh, this attack on Barack Obama's wife, Michelle, are you aware of what's going on? You might find this interesting. I certainly did. I wasn't even aware of it. We'll talk about that. That and more, and your phone calls when we come back. Do stay with us. I'm Mike Malloy on Nova M Radio Network.
You got that mystery. Lord, I need a plan. All I got is this compromise and a bag full of alibis. Lord, as empty as a bottle of whiskey in my shaking hand. It's gonna be December, darling, tomorrow.
Ready for a liberal helping of truth? It's more of Mike Malloy.
Twenty-six before the hour. Okay. It's time once again for Uncle Mike's Story Corner, brought to you by your friends in the Bush crime family, in all their various and sundry forms and misshapen blobs. Everybody comfortable and cozy? Got your jammies on? All right, gather around while Uncle Mike shares his story with you tonight. The title of tonight's program is Stuck and Suicidal in a Post-Katrina Trailer Park. And it's written by Alex Spiegel and first appeared on NPR's All Things Considered August 8th of this year. The first morning of my visit to Scenic Trails, I was walking the path between some trailers when I bumped into a man named Tim Zipek. He was young, tall, and solidly good-looking. I asked if I could speak to him for a moment, and he agreed. We found a spot of shade beneath a tree, and I started with what I considered a casual warm-up. "What's it like to live around here?" I asked. "Well," he replied, "I'll be honest. Ain't a day goes by when I don't think about killing myself." And so began my time in Scenic Trails, a FEMA trailer park deep in the Mississippi woods where 100 families have lived in near isolation for close to 2 years. Though Zipak was the first resident to tell me he wanted to commit suicide, he certainly wasn't the last. The day I spoke with him, three other residents confided the same. The second person was Stephanie Seeger, a 28-year-old mother of two. She was sitting in front of her trailer at a picnic table, her daughter on her lap, when she explained that if it weren't a sin, she would have blown her brains out months ago. "I know it's a bad thing to say because I'm a parent," she told me as her toddler played with her hair, "but I can't live like this no more." Stephanie Seeger and Tim Zipek aren't alone. According to a recent study of 92 different Katrina FEMA parks, published in the Annals of Emergency Medicine, suicide attempts in Louisiana and Mississippi's parks are 70 times higher than the national average. 70 times higher than the national average. Major depression is 7 times the national rate. When I first read those numbers, I found them hard to believe, but after 3 days at Scenic Trails, they made a lot more sense. The residents there, in essence, are trapped. It is no longer possible for them to live outside the trailer parks. Prior to Katrina, most of the people who now live in the parks were renters. Along the Mississippi coast, a family of four could rent a 2- or 3-bedroom apartment or a small home for about $500 a month. But when the storm wiped the Mississippi coast clean, it took out all the housing infrastructure that supported these people. Most of them are minimum wage workers who live paycheck to paycheck. Today, a 2 or 3 bedroom apartment in Hancock County, where Scenic Trails is located, costs $800, $900, $1,000 a month. This is an impossible amount of money for the people who live in the parks, and there is no immediate end in sight. FEMA says it would like to close the parks, but state and federal government plans to rebuild low-income housing in Mississippi for Mississippi Gulf Coast residents have yet to break ground. Housing experts say it will probably take years to produce enough low-cost housing to move people out of the parks. And so, they are stuck. And the place they are stuck in is not the kind of place you would want to spend an extended amount of time. For 2 years, many have lived in travel trailers intended for weekend use, families of four housed in a space the size of most people's living rooms. Worse, as time wears on, the communities around them seem to be falling into a kind of madness. At Scenic Trails, almost everyone at the camp has been burglarized at least once. Meth and cocaine addiction is rampant, and residents seem to be turning against one another. Recently, the park has seen a rash of animal mutilations. One resident told me that her cat had come home bleeding, a long, thin razor cut along its leg. Another resident said his dog's throat had been cut, and several people reported that someone in the camp had been feeding antifreeze to dogs. No one seemed to have a particular suspect in mind. There was no specific theory of why. That was just the way things went at the camp nowadays. With no way to leave, people were angry and frustrated, and so they acted out on the animals, on each other, and on themselves. Another stirring episode from Uncle Mike's Story Corner. Thank you very much for gathering around to listen. We'll have another episode for you sometime, probably next week. Now, that was sent to me by Alice in Arkansas. And the reason I think that Alice mentions in her email, it's impossible for these people to rent, but not for investors to buy up GoZone condos complete with Crimson Tide bric-a-brac and granite countertops. Be sure to go look at the picture gallery. It's a nation's shame. And she leaves a link here from NPR.org. This is in relation to the story we were talking about. Was it last night, Kathy, when everything went to hell, about the go zones, the zones set up by an act of Congress after Katrina that allows huge early depreciated tax breaks for people who or companies or real estate developers who invest in rebuilding the infrastructure along the Mississippi Gulf Coast where Katrina hit. But what is happening is that 200 miles inland, in Alabama anyway, near Tuscaloosa, near the University of Alabama, developers are using these tax breaks to build million-dollar condos for graduates of the University of Alabama to go get drunk and play with each other during football season. Meanwhile, down on the Mississippi Gulf Coast, where people are committing suicide and dying and going insane, the developers are doing nothing. This is astonishing stuff. I mean, how is that possible? How is it possible? I know. I understand. This is naive question 7,413 for the Malloy program, but what the hell? How is it possible? How is it possible that within the same state, in this case, Alabama, or if not within the same state, just a couple miles over this imaginary state line into Mississippi. How is it possible that there are two groups of people, both of whom are Americans? One group is indulging itself in a manner that is obscene. University of Alabama graduates who made it big. By God, I made it big, man. I made me just a whole hell of a lot of money. You know what I'm doing? I'm involved in a hedge fund. You know what them sons of bitches are, hedge fund? Man, you know what else I'm involved in now? I'll tell you what I'm doing now. You know all these poor bastards that are losing their houses? Hell, I'm buying them. Man, I'm buying them for 10 cents on the damn dollar. Can you believe that? And then I'm flipping them. Man, I'm telling you, this is some good stuff. Man, I love poverty. I love destruction. I love chaos and catastrophe. Man, woo! My preacher said it's okay, too, because Jesus loves a rich man. So you have that group. And then right down the road, so to speak, you have people who are going insane, who are suffocating, who are dying, who are living in formaldehyde trailers. And this rat bastard, the first guy I just described to you, he is the one sucking the blood, the life force, out of the people who are living in the FEMA trailers, just devouring them. He might as well be down there with a steak knife and a fork, carving into these people and eating them. How have we come up with a society that has... This is just one example. Hell, there's, what, a million? How do we come up with a society that can produce that sort of extremes, two extremes, in the same geographic area, just a little tad area? There it is. Americans all... Who, back when you were in school, well, hell, back when I was in school, we were taught we had shared values and we looked out after each other and praise Jesus. We go to church and do this and do that and yada yada and humpity humpity. And now look at us now. Look at us now. Taking that money, those tax breaks that were designed to help these old poor bastards down there in Mississippi and Louisiana, help them old poor bastards get back on their feet, all to hell with them. If they were decent human beings, they wouldn't have been living in rental houses anyway. Give me some of that tax break. I'm going to build me about 6, 7, 8, 20 of these million-dollar condos and make me some money. I'm going to make me some money. You understand what I'm saying with that, bro? I'm going to make me some money. Go Tide. Go Tide.
I crawled on 6 crooked highways. I've stepped in the middle of 7 side forests. I've been out in front of a dozen dead oceans. I've been 10,000 miles in the mouth of a graveyard. And it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard, it's a hard.
It's good to see, be able to look in people's eyes and not see them all bloodshot.
You sick twit. On the August 22nd edition of the CBS Early Show, which was what, yesterday, co-anchor Hannah Storm and CBS News host Bob Schieffer discussed a recent comment by Michelle Obama that said, quote, "If you can't run your own house, you can't run the White House." End quote. That's what Michelle Obama said. Storm claimed, the CBS anchor said, you know, a lot of people took the statement as a slam at Senator Hillary Clinton. And then Storm added, she and her husband both said, not so, Obama and his wife. But there is a school of thought that says with a woman running for the Democratic presidential nominee that it may be up to the wives to criticize her because the men can't, end quote. And then Schieffer said, I think there's something to what you say, Hannah. You have a woman running. It is sometimes difficult for men to criticize women. Yada, yada, yada. I mean, we just have some very activist wives this time out, especially on the Democratic side. Elizabeth Edwards and now Mrs. Obama speaking out. All right. Now, at no point, as Media Matters has documented, at no point did either Hannah Storm or Bob Schieffer provide Mrs. Obama's full comments in which she talked about her own family and did not refer generally or specifically to any other candidate. Now, here's the full quote regarding Michelle Obama's running your own house statement. quote, Michelle Obama, that one of the most important things that we need to know about the next president of the United States is he somebody that shares our values? Is he somebody that respects family? Is he a good and decent person? So our view was that if you can't run your own house, you certainly can't run the White House. So we've adjusted our schedules to make sure that our girls are first. So while he's traveling around, I do day trips. That means I get up in the morning, I get the girls ready, I get them off, I go and do trips, I'm home before bedtime. So the girls know that I was gone somewhere, but they don't care. They just know that I was at home to tuck them in at night, and it keeps them grounded. And children, the children in our country, have to know that they come first. And our girls do, and that's why we're doing this. We're in this race not just for children, but all of our children. Now that's what she said. She's talking about herself. She's talking about herself. You have to be able to run your own house if you're going to run the White House. She's talking about herself and her husband and her family. Now, the comments were first reported in New York Times article. And then the Chicago Sun-Times columnist Jennifer Hunter selectively cited Mrs. Obama's remarks and suggested she was referring to Hillary Clinton. Internet gossip Matt Drudge and a punk ass Matt Drudge then seized on Hunter's column, linking it to his website under the headline, "Obama's Wife Slams Hillary." You see how this works? Others in the mainstream media soon followed suit. On August 21st, CNN host Wolf Blitzer discussed Mrs. Obama's remarks with strategist Donna Brazile and John Fiore on CNN's The Situation Room, but failed again to provide the full context of Mrs. Obama's remarks. On August 21st, CNN's Lou Dobbs Tonight guest host Lisa Sylvester teased a segment on Mrs. Obama's comments by claiming that she, quote, apparently blasted Senator Hillary Clinton, end quote. On August 22nd edition of Fox News and Friends, co-host Gretchen Carlson teased a segment on the remarks by asserting that Mrs. Obama was, quote, taking off the gloves and letting loose the claws in making what some say is a personal attack on Hillary Clinton. Throughout the subsequent segment on Fox, the on-screen text read, "The claws come out. Mrs. Obama aims at Senator Clinton." And then it said, "Mrs. Obama versus Senator Clinton, cheap shot or fair territory?" And finally, "Darts flying, Michelle Obama heats up the campaign trail." You see how this works? This is how you destroy the candidacy of someone without deliberately and specifically and overtly attacking them. Michelle Obama was referring to she and her husband's methods, I'm sorry, to her and her husband's methods of maintaining their family. As she said, if you can't run your own house, you can't run the White House. And then she explained how she and her husband run their own house. And what happens? From mainstream media to a whore, no offense to sex workers, like Matt Drudge, to a false populist neo-Nazi like Lou Dobbs, to a former German U-boat commander Wolf Blitzer, to the thugs at Fox and Friends, all of a sudden, the story is Michelle Obama has attacked Hillary Clinton. Michelle Obama no more attacked Hillary Clinton than she attacked your grandmammy. She was talking about how she and her husband run her own family, but how easy it is for even an old warhorse like Bob Schieffer to completely, either through his approaching senility or deliberately, to obscure what the truth of the statement really was. This is how my husband and I run our house. Because if you can't run your house, how are you going to run the White House? That's what Michelle Obama was saying. You see how this works? Huh? Michelle Obama, with the help of Main Street Media, was swift-boated. Welcome back. It's about 7 past the hour. Before we go to your phone calls, and the number here is 800-989-1480. Last item here, Reg just sent me, and by the way, I mispronounced one of the founders of Zionism, Theodore Herzl. I was saying Herzl. I think most people just thought I was drunk, so anyway. But this item is in the Guardian Unlimited in today's paper. Well, yesterday's paper, since it's Friday in the UK now. British soldiers in Afghanistan are being supplied with a new super weapon. Ooh. To attack Taliban fighters more effectively, defense officials said yesterday. It's called an enhanced blast weapon, and it's based on thermobaric technology used in the powerful bombs dropped by the Russians to obliterate Grozny, the Chechen capital, and U.S. It's also used in U.S. so-called bunker buster bombs. You like that alliteration? Bunker buster bombs. We have big bunker buster bombs. Defense officials insisted yesterday that the British bombs were different. One British official said, quote, they are optimized to create blast rather than heat, adding that it would be misleading to call them thermobaric, because so-called, you see, thermobaric weapons have been used by the U.S. against suspected Al-Qaeda and Taliban underground bases. They combine heat and pressure to kill people over a wide area by sucking the air out of lungs and destroying internal organs. Jesus, God. And here we sit struggling to breathe in this horrible air, huh, Kathy? Sucking the air out of lungs and destroying internal organs. Ew. Defense officials in the UK described the new weapons as a shoulder-launched, quote, light anti-structure munition. Oh. They said the bombs would be more effective than conventional weapons, such as anti-tank missiles, which often miss their targets. Even when those anti-tank missiles hit, the damage is limited to a confined area. The new weapons will have none of that. They will suck air out of your lungs and liquefy your internal organs. You miserable bastards.
I wonder what Cheney was smoking when he came up with that one. I mean, that is just...
No, this is in the UK.
Well, I don't...
Well, we have
well,
them, too.
Please. But... I mean, it's like something out of some horrifying science fiction novel.
Sir Menzies Campbell, the Liberal Democratic leader, described the weapons as a serious step change for the British Army. Mr. Campbell added, quote, the continuing issue of civilian casualties in Afghanistan has enormous importance in the battle for hearts and minds. If these weapons contribute to the deaths of civilians, then a primary purpose of the British deployment is going to be made yet more difficult. Mr. Menzies added that the deployment of weapons should have been announced to members of Parliament rather than the press. Yeah, or members of Parliament. Oh, never mind. Sucks the air out of your lungs and liquefies your internal organs. A legal review for the weapon, officially called the Lightweight Anti-Structure Missile, or ASM, a legal review for the weapon considered issues including whether it was prohibited or restricted under international law, whether it could be used indiscriminately, and whether it would cause unnecessary suffering. Oh my God. Yeah, I remember we talked about the bunker busters, Kathy, a couple of years ago when the U.S. military first rolled them out. Remember? We used them in Afghanistan, and you and I were shocked. I tell you, shocked. Actually, it was about 3 years ago, 4 years ago. It's when we were still with that toy UAW network. What was it? IE America. Wasn't that fun? But I can remember sitting there one night back in the old studio, you know, just stunned, my eyes rolling up in my head. And this is before Molly was born. This is back when you and I were still kind of footloose and fancy free, thinking about bunker buster bombs, thermobaric. That sounds like a procedure you get when you go in to see if you got an ulcer.
I had to have a thermobaric today.
Really? How'd it turn out? Oh, I'm clear. Thermobaric. Thermonuclear. Thermo.
I think that means heat.
And then to find out what these things did. Ah, the mind of American and British and human weapons makers is just stunning. Liquefies your internal organs and sucks the air out of your lungs. But we had a review to make sure they weren't causing unnecessary suffering. I want to go home now. I really do. I just want to go home. I want to go home and pull the blankets over my head and cuddle up with my teddy bear. Thermobaric weapons. All right, let's do some phone calls here. Let's start with Sarge, who is in Phoenix, listening on KPHX, who spent some time dealing with the Katrina situation. Hey, Sarge.
Yeah, I spent a little time with that, haven't I?
Yeah, you did, didn't you?
You know, that article Jesse sent just made me think, we do have such weapons called FEMA trailers.
FEMA trailers. They suck the air out of your lungs, too, don't they? And
they
turn your
sure
internal
do.
Organs into mush, yeah.
They sure do, Mike. I mean, I was talking to Jim. Yes, he's going to be on my show this Sunday. And he was telling me, and that's the main reason I called tonight, is that the people down there just got one hell of a scare from this potential storm coming.
Mm-hmm.
And now the people are even more demoralized. And these formaldehyde in these trailers, we found out actually can cause people to commit suicide.
Mm.
And so the situation's really kind of crazy, you know?
You know, I thought first I was reading a typo when I read that the suicide rate in some of these areas is 70 times the national average. That you know, that's doubled over and over and over again. It's just astonishing to me. And at the same time, you have these go zone tax rebates that are going to people who are building $1 million condos in Tuscaloosa. This is just I can't get my mind around that.
Well, Mike, we have dubbed it the 3C recovery: cronies, casinos, and condominiums.
Mm.
Those are the ones making the money, and they've even planned brand new casinos coming in, some of them that wasn't there before the storm, and I'm sure they're going to get some help from the government. Meanwhile, we have still over 20,000 FEMA trailers. We still have...
Oh, you have a hell of a lot more than that, Sarge.
That's just in Mississippi.
Yeah, oh, just in Mississippi. Okay.
Right. All right. And Louisiana, there's still a lot. In fact, a guy was on my show a few weeks back, and his sister-in-law was in New Orleans, and she committed suicide during the show. So I mean, the people are so demoralized still, and I'm hoping, you know, maybe, and thanks to NovaM for airing such a show as this one, you know, we definitely are getting the word out. But people, if you have time, go down and volunteer. Go to Jim Yassey's website. Let's help these people out.
Yeah, what's that website again, quick, Sarge?
www.jccsc.org.
jccsc.org. Thanks, Sarge.
Thank you, Mike.
All right, you can hear Sarge on KPHX in Phoenix on Sunday mornings. When I read stories or hear stories like that, I wonder how long it'll be before people finally decide it is time for armed rebellion. I swear to God, I do.
But I'm committed to reducing the amount of nuclear weaponry.
As far as the lung-sucking, organ-liquefying thermobaric weapons that seem to be all the rage here, now that the Brits are going to use them... You know, our use of them kind of slid beneath the radar scope after they were introduced. They must have brought them out in August. You don't introduce new product in August. You just don't, whether it's a war or mass murder or new weapons. But an email here from one of our regular listeners who says regarding these thermobaric weapons... The subject line says, and that's all there is, a subject line, the breath-sucking, organ-liquefying bomb can be modified to ignore innocent Iraqi mothers and babies. Yeah.
I can just hear all the little Hollywood starlets right now saying, well, bariatric weapon? Like, is it like lipo? I mean, like, can I do it and then go out dancing later, or will it be safe? My thighs be thinner then?
You're talking.
I mean, it liquefies fat, right?
You're talking about the Bush girls.
Oh, apparently. My God.
All right, let's do some phone calls as promised. Bruce is calling from California, listening on the Internet. Bruce, welcome to the program.
Good evening, Miguel.
Hey.
Before I start, if you wouldn't mind, I'd like to preface with a link.
Sure,
that way those who are online can look at it. It's signs-of-the-times.org.
No, wait. That just went totally confusing.
Signs,
S-I-G-N-S.
Correct, -of-the-times.org.
Oh, signs-of-the-times.org,
right,
signs-of-the-times.org
with okay. Hyphens between each word.
Okay.
And when you get to the search window, type in suicide bombing, and it's the first link.
Suicide bombing.
Right. It's a long link, otherwise it's hard to read. Basically it's talking about you mentioned suicide bombings earlier, and it's talking about the use of suicide bombings as a tactic by U.S. forces, that it does not fit any logical historical pattern of past guerrilla campaigns in Vietnam, in Norway and France, in Iraq when it was against the British, that the suicide bombings was never used as a tactic or bombings against other civilians. Now, certainly, certain sympathizers and others were murdered or assassinated, but the suicide bombing campaign fits a classic counterinsurgency effort to separate the guerrillas from the population by making the population believe that these people are these so-called insurgents are against them. Then they divide them from the population. So essentially, it's a known counterinsurgency tactic. Two British SAS men were captured in Basra that were dressed in full Arab garb and driving a truck full of trucks.
You know, it's a tactic. I don't know about necessarily the suicide bombing, but the use of car bombs and truck bombs is a tactic that was first introduced by the Jewish terrorist organization Irgun or Mossad, Irgun or the Stern Gang, one of the two.
Against what?
Against the British in
in
Palestine.
Palestine. That's the whole point.
Palestine. It was a car bomb that destroyed the King David Hotel Tel Aviv, Jerusalem. I'm sorry, I think it was Jerusalem. I don't know.
Point.
Anyway, it was a car bomb that was designed by Jewish terrorists who were involved in overthrowing and removing.
They had a specific military objective.
Yeah, right.
That's the whole point. These don't. These killing other Iraqis doesn't fit that pattern. There were plenty of bombings in Vietnam against American civilians. IEDs are against American troops.
Right.
I meant to say American military, not civilians. But, I mean, IEDs are a classic attack against American forces, which makes military sense.
Right, but suicide bombings to me are the private property of religious fanatic psychopaths. How else do you get somebody in certain regions of the world? And I'm not trying to minimize a love of tribe or love of nation, but I don't think you can get people to commit massive acts of murder, and including your own suicide, unless you inspire them, and that's the wrong word, with promises that they will go to paradise.
But if you think about the Israeli examples of suicide bombings, these people walk into a cafe, and who do they kill? They kill Jews.
Right.
They don't kill their own citizens. They're not killing Palestinians. That's
no, right. No, no, no. I understand what you're saying. My point is simply that people who use suicide bombing as a terror tactic, to me, I may be wrong, but I would think have to be religious fanatics of a most extreme order. But I hear what you're saying, and I get the subtext of what you're saying too, Bruce. I got to leave it there. Thank you, sir. I appreciate you checking in. We'll be back after the break. I'm Mike Malloy.
Has he mentioned yet tonight how much he hates these people? It's more Mike Malloy.
Why, sure I have. 25 before the hour, Suzanne in L.A. writes, good evening, Mike. It's still going. DraftGore.com is 300 away from 110,000. And ain't he looking better and better? Yeah, go there. DraftGore.com. Sign the petition.
I'm ready to start kidnap Gore and
force
keep
him to run.
Keep him tied up in your basement until he forces himself into the race.
All right, the phone number here, let me see. Oh, my God, what is this, three open lines? What, did I piss everyone off tonight? 800-989-1480. Don't let these lines sit here like this. Let's go to the two that are not open. Edie is calling from Montgomery, Alabama, listening on the Internet. Hey, Edie.
Hello, Michael. It's good to hear you sounding so good again.
Well, I'm about 90% back.
Well, you sound good. I called because, have you heard about this Freedom Watch that Ari Fleischer's pushing?
Oh, yeah, we've been talking about it. That's the organization or the PR firm that's been producing these horrific commercials using GIs with amputated limbs to...
Oh, yeah, you were talking about it earlier?
Yeah.
It's heartbreaking. You see these widows and moms and soldiers and...
Yeah, but Ari Fleischer's got to make money. Why not make it on the pain and grief and horror of his fellow Americans? Ari Fleischer is like these other neocons. He's a rapacious, vampiric bastard. So what difference does it make?
I know. And he was on somebody's show. I don't remember whose it was, but the might have been Bob Schieffer. But anyway, he asked, can you give us the name of that young soldier that was just speaking?
Yeah.
He didn't have the name.
Yeah, I think it might have been on CNN. He of course not. To these people, America's soldiers are chunks of meat. They are commodities to move around, ship them home in unmarked crates, ship them over in unmarked aircraft. They're chunks of meat, Edie. When Ari Fleischer finally steps off this earthly coil and the rest of these pigs, this is the only thing that pisses me off about being an atheist and realizing that there's no there beyond this consciousness, is that I almost wish there was, so these people could go to the hell that they so richly deserve.
I know. I told my daughter, I said it would be worth for me to spend eternity in hell to watch these fast plot fry.
I hear you. All right, Edie, thanks. I got to move on. I appreciate you checking in. Take care.
Bye.
Tony is calling from Phoenix, listening on KPHX. Hey, Tony, welcome to the program.
Mike, how you doing, fellow Prednisone user?
Oh no. No, I'm off that stuff, man. That is
I'm on 60 milligrams a day.
Oh my God, you must be a total mental wreck.
I am. My mother said, "What is wrong with you?" Prednisone.
Man, that stuff is vicious. Oh well.
Yes, I just wanted to comment on the Christiane, I'm a poor thing tonight was really good. I thought it was a very, very good segment.
Whose turn in the barrel was it tonight? The Christians?
The Christians
all right.
And they're just tyrannical as the Muslims. I mean, these people just don't get it. I mean, they don't see themselves like that, and it's just really disturbing. I mean, there was one little episode where she interviewed this family, and they homeschool, and the kids all wear long dresses, and they have to conform to a certain part because the Bible says this and the Bible says that, and Christiane asked her, well, isn't that kind of like the Taliban do? And he says, no, we're not as radical.
But, yeah.
I mean, where does it go from there, and how do you stop it? I mean, these people are, they've got Fox News to back them up. I mean, the Republicans have a television station now. That's why they're getting so successful. But it just really scares you to think that these people are really amongst us, and they really want to change you to be like them. They're like little drones.
It's horrifying. It's horrifying. This religious spookery that these people, on which these people, whether these people are of any of the four major religions, base their lives, to me is just it's insanity. And the thing that is worrisome to someone like me anyway, Tony, is the fact that there is a definitely a surge, to use a term that Bush loves. There's a surge of this fundamentalist crapola that these religious nuts are using to justify everything from mass murder to suppression of women to brutalization of children to jingoistic attitudes regarding either their country or their belief system. It's horrifying. It's just horrifying.
It is, and the part that bothers me really the most is they don't get it. They don't see it. They're just brainwashed. It's like the madrasas. The Baptist religion, the Christian religion, they're all just like these little madrasas where they brainwash them to think, this is the way you have to be. I mean, the Mormons are the same way. I mean, they'll come to your door and tell you how great it is to be a Mormon. And I don't get it. I just don't get it. I don't know why these people are so brainwashed and they don't see what's really going on with their world. And that's absolutely disturbing.
It is. It's beyond disturbing. It was.
I wanted to say I loved the show last night, and I didn't think you have two open lines. They won't be for long, but I thought that was just a great show last night, and I really enjoyed it.
Well, thanks. We're all filled up now. We're going to move on and try to get some in. Thanks, Tony. I appreciate you checking in. All right. Take care. Kathy, you speak French. I don't. The first name, D-E-N-I-S, as in Denis. Is it Denis? Denis Diderot? All right. Denis. I know this quote is attributed to other people, but it was Diderot who, and I'm paraphrasing, the humanity would not be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest, something like that. Huh?
I thought it was Pope.
Pope? No. Well, whatever. But the point being, of course... I bet I'll get some emails now with the correct quote.
Oh, and probably a bunch from, you know, good Catholics who are like, how dare you say that about our Pope?
I know. I used to be so tolerant of religious belief, fascinated by most of it, but tolerant of all of it because, you know, I was brought up in it. The Baptist faith, the Methodist faith, I had just all my friends growing up were Catholics and Jews, very few Protestants because of the neighborhood I lived in. It was an immigrant neighborhood. So most of my classmates and school chums and playmates as a kid were either Catholics or Jews. And so, you know, being exposed to all this religiosity, and then my grandmother was this fundamentalist Baptist, and for some unknown reason, my parents sent us four siblings to a Methodist church. They never attended with us, but they sent us. So, you know, I used to be able to look at religion as kind of something... there's the real world, and then there's that, and somehow that supersedes the real world, and the real world really is kind of dominated by that. But then, you know, like most people, I guess, the older I got, the more I started to understand the natural world, the physical world, the scientific method, and at the same time being exposed to historical mythology, all the religions on the planet, some that precede Christianity by millennia, that have the same stories, the virgin birth, the crucifixion, the rising on the third day, yada, 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 yada. And then starting to read people like Carl Sagan or you know, whatever. You understand the path. You understand the path. And to finally come to realize the slavery that is religion, the absolute mental crypt that your mind into which your mind is inserted in order for a person to follow some religious dogma. I mean, really follow it, to really believe it, to really get one's entire consciousness and psychology and belief system around one of these religions is just like, oh my God. Now it's like, you know, the first person that, burns himself on a flaming campfire, you know, he just can't understand why everybody else doesn't understand that fire burns, you know. So I reached that point at a certain point in my life, too, and I'm sure a lot of people, you know, we're all born atheists anyway. You know, we're all born secular humanists. We're all born absolutely clean and clear of any religious nonsense. It's what's pumped into us. Think about that. You know, every single person who is born an atheist. And then look what happens. Oh, my goodness.
You don't believe in the God gene, apparently.
No, that's quotes around the word God. That's just a genetic predisposition. And I don't have any problem with it. A genetic predisposition to believe in something greater than or... higher than, you know, us. And I think that is a natural consequence of just looking around at the power of the natural world and realizing we have no control over anything. That's just wailing and screaming into the darkness. Oh, well, we'll be right back. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M.
faith is gone. When is your mission complete? When the whole world's in stain, can you tell me now? Tell me, please. I am listening.
Ten before the hour. All right, very quickly here. Regarding the phrase, man will never be free until the last king is strangled with the entrails of the last priest. In fact, Diderot lifted this formulation from the atheist French priest Jean Meslet, who preceded Diderot and whose multi-volume memoir subtitle was, quote, of the vanity and falseness of all the divinities and all the religions of the world, to be addressed to my parishioners after my death to serve them as a testimony to truth. End quote. Woo! See, I knew that we would get more than just Denis Diderot's quote. Thanks, Reg. Thanks also to the crew who put the program together tonight, the usual gang of bandits, Ian Huff, who engineered the show from KPHX, our flagship station. Careful there. In Phoenix. Also, Billy Foster, who is our chat room moderator and chief information officer. Is he still the CIO? We haven't hired a real one yet, a full-time one. He's, okay. Chris in Minnesota, our senior correspondent, Catherine Bay, is our executive producer. Back to your phone calls here in the moments that we do have left. Phil is calling from San Diego, listening on KLSD. Hey, or KSLD. Hey, Phil.
Yeah, good evening, Mike.
How you doing?
Thanks for hanging in there after last night's debacle.
Right. Well, but, you know, stuff happens.
Well, the man earlier said it right on. You really did a heck of a job last night. I mean, everything that you told us, you know, the truth seekers. And I wanted to give a shout out after Kathy said what she said about, you know, the pictures. Good golly, Miss Molly.
Well, thanks. That's real kind. Kathy is your typical mom who loves pictures of her baby. There's no question about that.
Did you like them, Phil? Did you really like them? Which was your favorite?
Well, I
like the ones with her on the beach with her curly hair.
I'm going to see him tomorrow because I got to go to the library to get access to the computer. So,
yeah.
But I'll definitely see him.
All right. Well, thanks. I appreciate that. Now,
sure.
What you really called about?
Well, actually, the other thing, just a couple minutes ago when you were talking, you know, the diatribe about religion and when your relatives did what they did, and it was so neat what you said about we're born with just being clear.
Oh yeah, we are. We're a clean slate, and especially where it concerns dogmatic beliefs, whether they're political or religious, economic, you know, whatever they are. We have to learn that stuff.
But I like the way you closed it because you said, "Oh my goodness!" You didn't say, "Oh my godness." I wanted to say this because I love what you say. How you know, like, have I told you how much I hate these? You know, and then you have your adjectives. You know, they're slimy. They're whatever. You have there's so many things. I'm not going to use the B word, but
thank you.
I'm just going to say after what you said last night about the killing fields. To me, this is what they are. They're the killing kind.
Yeah,
and it's like. It's ironic because they're not kind. You know, it's just so. I mean, Tom Hartman the other morning said something, and it just laid it right on the mark. Because you always talk about how he can control himself, his anger, and just you know do the even keel thing.
Mm-hmm.
And he said this thing about when Shrub went to the VFW and did his number about Vietnam thing, comparing it to Iraq, and he said, how can this man say this when he not only was AWOL, And then he said, you're only AWOL 30 days. After 30 days, you become a deserter.
You're a deserter.
And that's what he was
for
7 months.
Yeah.
It's unbelievable. It's like, and you said it earlier, that maybe that's what it's going to take after everything that you said about when you were talking to Sarge and he was revealing the things about Mississippi and Louisiana. Maybe it's going to be an AR, an armed revolution. I mean, these people are just, they're just unconscious. You know, it's...
I hear you.
Thanks for being there, man.
All right. I appreciate it, Phil. Take care. And I do appreciate your call. Michael is calling from San Francisco. Michael, listening on the Quake. Hey, Michael, welcome to the program.
Hey, Mike. Hey, I just wanted to say I really appreciate your talking about AIPAC earlier this evening.
Well, that was just my reading of Shelley Drobny's essay that's at opednews.com.
Well, yeah, but, you know, there's so little criticism of Israel and its lobby anywhere in the U.S. media, so it's kind of a breath of fresh air. Especially when you go back and look at how Israel was created in the first place. You know, these Zionists just went in and drove 750,000 Palestinians out of there by force into exile, into foreign countries, into squalid refugee camps and stuff. That was 60 years ago. And it's pretty much just been total misery for them ever since. And even in Gaza, this past week, about half of them haven't had any electricity at all. So it's just mind-boggling the suffering these people have gone through.
Yeah, I don't think any particular people, in fairness, has an exclusive franchise on suffering. I also think that the whole situation in the Middle East, and I don't want to stir up this topic now because we're out of time, but the whole situation between the what we now call Israelis and Palestinians could have been handled so much more rationally had the world not just spent 6 or 7 years ignoring the slaughter of 6 to 10 million people simply because they were Jews. And if the world had offered refuge and solace and protection to people who were being chased around the globe by a bunch of mad, frothing-at-the-mouth killers. So while I completely agree and sympathize with the Palestinian point of view, I also understand that there is a lot more to it than just what history says, political history. Thanks for participating tonight. I'll see you tomorrow night. Take care, okay? Really, take care. Keep it lit. I'm Mike Malloy. This is Nova M Radio. We'll